It's around 2 o'clock, a little before, on May 22nd, Tuesday afternoon. We're relatively warm day in Sacramento. We're indoors in the basement of the... Anyway, we're in the convention center, and we're talking to one of the homeless folks from Santa Barbara. Your name, sir?
Squirrel.
Yeah, Squirrel? And Squirrel, you've not only been a habitué of Santa Barbara, but you've been in Sacramento. What other towns have you frequented?
Yuma, Houston, Austin, Tucson, Salida, Colorado, Denver, Boulder, Netherlands, particularly most anything from the west, Mississippi River back to the West Coast. Wherever the rock field, that's where I roll. When it stops, I stop.
In the last couple of years, where have you spent most of your time?
All over. There's no particular spot. 2 weeks here, a month there, 3 weeks here.
So you haven't spent a lot of time recently in Santa Barbara?
No, just about 3 weeks.
So you're up here in Sacramento, and Sacramento is a town that you've actually been to before, because you were commenting to me that Lowe's and Fish's, which is now a pretty large-scale operation here, sort of has a homeless containment camp all contained in itself there over on, I guess, that side of the tracks. That it only has one employee that you know of that was formerly homeless?
In the Mary Silter, as far as I know, she says she was the only worker in there, paid staff member, that was a homeless person before. The rest are, in fact, never been out there. Don't know what it's like.
And this is an analysis that you made recently?
Yeah, I noticed 2 years ago, it was the same way, that most all the staff workers in the homeless shelter official knows, as with almost all the homeless shelters, have never truly been homeless. They're there basically for the high dollars, because of tax dollars or whatever. They're being paid like $30,000, $40,000 a year to manage these homeless centers.
Now, you came up on the bus from L.A. with the L.A. Coalition and Hunger and Homelessness, along with Bob Hansen and other activists from the Santa Barbara area, Dan Knapp and so forth. Did you have any expectations here?
No, I say the same old shit. It's been the other 10 or 12 conventions I've been at. A lot of words, no actions, a lot of nitpicking on the wordage of their social statements. That's not the way to clear this problem. It's not.
So this isn't the first convention of this sort you've been to?
No, I've been going to them for these type of things for a better part of 30 years.
Why do you come to them if they are simply restatements of verbal formula?
Because one day, one person somewhere is going to hear what I've got to say, going to see how much truth is in it, of how to solve this problem, and maybe that one person will solve it.
And perhaps that one person will be in the Free Radio Santa Cruz audience. What would you say to that one person?
That the cure to this problem is right before us, very simple, will cost the tax dollars basically nothing, and save the tax dollars millions. That's the WPA program. Reinstate it. You don't work, you don't eat. It solves the homeless problem. They house them, they clothe them, they put them in nice barracks, put them to work. When they're in 2-3 years, they got a trade, they're back where they got money to go rent a place, they're off the streets. Be done in the 30s, they'll be done again.
So, are you yourself a working man, or are you, how would you describe how you survive?
I'm a street vendor. I've been to sage, rocks around my neck, wrapped in fancy wire, necklaces, candles, pencils. Ask me a question, I'll tell you an answer for a quarter. Whatever it takes to earn a dollar without asking for a handout. You know, I did not ever receive charity from nobody for no reason, at no time. Because the simple key to the homeless problem is loss of pride. Most of these gentlemen here don't have the pride to get themselves up. Don't care to.
Now, yesterday you were at a protest run by SHOC, Sacramento Homeless Organizing Committee, at the state capitol. Mostly a speak out with some eloquent speeches, and at the end an attempt to walk through the Capitol building with small picket signs that was rebuffed by the California Highway Patrol officials, an apparent violation of the law, because such marching through the Capitol is allowed, provided you don't block the doorways and provided that you don't have a sign larger than a certain dimension, which the signs weren't. But what was your analysis of the rally? Any thought? I think you spoke at the rally, didn't you not?
Yes, I did. And again, they're all missing the key issue. They're saying give, 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 give. They speak nothing of having the homeless give back. And the way I feel and the way I was raised and the way I live was that if you do not work, you do not expect to get anything. You must do something. It's just picking up cigarette butts off the street. It's still working. You must earn your daily bread. And they're all speaking, we need to solve the homeless problem. Let's give them this, let's give them that. They're throwing millions and still not solving it. Why not save millions by putting them to work?
So, how would you sum up your reaction? Did you find anything that you enjoyed or found positive in this last Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Housing California / California Homeless Civil Rights Organizing Project series of meetings?
Same old shit, just different color. They ain't gonna do a damn thing. I don't see anything being done. Just a lot of people making big bucks off it. Look at the Sheraton. They're spending $160 a night to put us up there. They could put us up in tents. Let the people actually see the homeless, live like the homeless. Take them on Fish and Lowe's to feed them instead of buffet lunch at $15 a plate. You know, take them on Fish and Lowe's and get them 3 bean soup and stale bread. Maybe then they'll realize what's happening. So there's basically nobody here that's homeless. When you compare the amount of people here, they're all here for the bucks, for the vacation, for the nice time. I mean, there's maybe 10% here actually true homeless, or actually have been homeless. The rest are working jokes.
I'd say more like 0.1%, actually.
No, I'd say no more than 10%, you know. I can't make it because I don't really know, but I'm saying just by the looks of them, by the way they're talking, they don't know what they're talking about. They're talking out their ass. They're just throwing big bucks and making big bucks.
What about the homeless advocates in this particular subgroup, the California Homeless Civil Rights Organizing Project, which is really largely the creation of three groups: BOSS, Berkeley, Better Opportunities for Self-Sufficiency, San Francisco Coalition on Homelessness, and your L.A. Coalition to End Hunger and Homelessness, and then a couple of other independent activists. What do you think? I know they spend all their time jabbering, well, much of their time jabbering about mission statements. What do you think of the, were you there for the workshops? I guess you weren't there for the workshops so much, right?
I've been plugging in and out. Same old shit, it's a different color. Same thing being said everywhere. A lot of words, no action. They're missing the key to it all. They're talking about changing the law and changing this and changing that, but not speaking of changing the people. The way you can change the people is reinstill hope and pride in them. And you can't do it by throwing dollars at them. You can't do it by throwing, you know, giving them free food or free housing. You can't do it by legitimizing their status. I mean, there's been homelessness in this country from the very beginning. In the 1930s, we damn near wiped it out. Then it was through the social actions of all these groups that made it worse. Because they kept on giving and never taking back from the people. Make the homeless pay for themselves.
What about the idea of civil rights for homeless people in terms of fair treatment by police and authorities? Do you think that that is sort of an irrelevant thing? Or
yes, I do, because if you do like the old WPA program did and put them to work, then you won't have to worry about civil rights and their right to sleep on the street, because they won't have to sleep on the street. They'll have a bed. You don't have to worry about their rights to be able to drink, and probably because they can drink now in their own room. You're just basically taking the tail end of the problem and the front of the problem and not seeing the middle problem. How to take and get them back to work. Isn't that what they're supposed to be about? To make them self-sufficient? To give them housing? Let them earn their housing. Put them to work on city projects, on county projects, on state projects, on federal projects, in empty military bases, in abandoned forest camps. Put them in tents.
Now, have you no problem with the way police treat the population generally, particularly homeless and poor people?
I have a great problem with it because they fuck with me all the time. But again, you're only seeing the cause, not the cause, you're seeing with the result of the cause. If you get rid of the cause, then you won't have the result, then you won't have the police hassles. I've got more knots on my head and more arrests than I wish to think about for being homeless. I've been homeless since the day I was born. I've raised 4 generations of homeless. But we're not actually homeless, we're rootless. We're all street vendors. We refuse to live in buildings. We live in tents, buses, cars, whatever. Make our daily bread.
Well, if there were a WPA program that offered you all this work, would you choose instead to continue a sort of a migratory lifestyle and say, well, that's fine, but that's not something I would choose to do?
Yes, because I make enough money where I don't need it. I'm rarely without food, I'm rarely without housing, I'm rarely without anything I need.
How about civil rights? Do you have civil rights, or do you feel that those are still being denied homeless people?
Civil rights are being denied to homeless people in a lot of ways, but again, it's their own damn fault.
Say it's your fault that you're being denied civil rights?
In a lot of ways, yes. Because I cannot vote, I don't vote in elections, I don't believe in this government. I don't believe in this country. I follow my own rules. But most homeless could not live my lifestyle because they did not start from the beginning. This is an indoctrinated lifestyle from my parents. It's one I'm happy with. But most homeless could not survive like I do, and improve themselves by saving their spare changing and living their own bills. You know, it doesn't make no sense.
What lies in the future for you, Squirrel? What do you see coming down the pike? You're, what, 45, 50?
About another 3 more years before I take myself out. My health is failing to the point where I can no longer keep up with this lifestyle. And I'm not going to live a lifestyle that I'm not going to be happy with. And so I'll just find me a quiet place like my wife did and take myself out. I refuse to be a burden to society. And I'm getting to the point where I will be a burden, not only to society, but also to my children.
On the other hand, you also have a wealth of experience to communicate to your children and to those that haven't had your experience.
This is true, but no one's listening. They don't want to listen.
In fact, you're a writer, are you not?
Yes, I am.
What have you written?
Roll Your Own, a book called Cries in the Wild, and I'm working on my third book now, the Stories of the Married People of the Streets. I'm not sure that it's just a working title, but it's a series of interviews over the last 5 to 7 years where I've got down in their shoes and lived with them. I lived in a wheelchair for 5 months. I lived in an address for 3 months to see what it was like to be as a woman and treated as a woman. You know, I lived in the streets of Sacramento, underneath the bridges and down into Badlands. I lived in quite a few homeless camps. I rode the rails. I've done this, but just put myself in their shoes to see how they live. And I see the same problem, no matter what lifestyle. It all comes down to the point they don't want to work. I ain't saying it's all of them, but the majority of them, just you could not give them a job paying $40 an hour. They don't want to work it.
Now, are your books available still?
Yes. They're all probably published to vanity because the public does not want to hear this. They don't want to see hippie buses all photographed up because it glorifies our lifestyle.
So your book is currently unpublished?
Yes.
Or? So how would one, sorry?
My book is published.
So how would one get a copy of it?
I can probably get you a copy by calling my friend and have it sent to you. I've got probably about 4,000 more copies sitting in his garage.
Good. Well, I'll try to get a copy of your book and make it available to the Santa Cruz Public Library so that those who wish to...
You already turned it down.
We'll present it again in a more forceful manner.
Yeah. Because I sent it to a lot of the California libraries and other libraries of the cities I've been to, and 90% of them sent it back. Said it wasn't appropriate for their library collection.
Well, it's certainly appropriate for my library collection. And for those who want to get through to you, Squirrel, to... write you questions as to what you've said or seek for your advice on various subjects. Is there an address you can be reached at? If you want to reach Squirrel, write him care of Robert Norse, that's me. Actually, the thing to do is to write me, and inside the note, put a note to Squirrel, and I will forward it to him by contacting, I guess you're down there with the Santa Barbara Homeless Coalition.
Another week, and I'm gone. I got to go harvest some more sage, and I'm headed north. God knows where I end up. I'm initially trying to head for the Rainbow Nationals, but I may make it there, and I may not. I may get way late.
That's on July 4th.
Yes. I'll probably try to get there in the middle of next month, and then...
Where will they be this year?
Washington State.
Washington State at?
And then probably Tucson from there, and then from there probably back home to Alaska.
So you're going to be a hard man to catch up with. Any questions, you better quickly phone them in. The 423 Huff, and we will dash them out to Squirrel, who will be in one tree or another. But don't call him nuts.
No, I'm just 5150 and proud of it.
Thank you, Squirrel. And this is Robert in Sacramento signing off.
Adios.
So sort of as an addenda here, while Squirrel writes down some of the bumper stickers for my car, the slogans that I've got on my trusty red Toyota station wagon. You were saying, Squirrel, that kind of giving us tips on how to sleep outside, sleep on a bag which is filled with decomposing grass or sawdust, because as it decomposes it produces heat. And you also mentioned that in Sacramento 3 years ago, after sleeping bags were, these new Arctic sleeping bags were given out in great numbers to homeless people by Loaves and Fishes, a homeless support group, the park services went through and actually didn't take blankets, but just went after these bags and took them and destroyed them, is that right?
Yes, threw them in the dumpster. I watched them do it.
And you think this practice of deliberate attacks on the survival situation of homeless people continues?
Yes. They've been known to do it, and they've been still down there doing it. And they use the excuse that we're camping on state land without a permit. We need a camping permit. But who's got the money to go buy a camping permit? And two, how do you describe where you're going to be camping at? There's nothing on the market or spot. You mean 4th Pier near the 12th Street Bridge on the south side? I mean...
How much does a permit cost?
I don't know, but who's got the money down here?
And would they grant it anyway?
Doubt it. Doubt it very seriously, because you're not a religious or political group. You must be organized with a title, with a business license, or a certificate, so when you're authorized by the state. They're not going to give you, as a private individual, a camping license for the city. I mean, I almost guarantee it.
And this practice, which you think was widespread 3 years ago, is still widespread?
According to everyone I spoke to that I know from the past days, yes. They're still doing it. They're still taking shopping carts and throwing the city away. They can give you a $100 fine here and 6 months in jail for possessing a shopping cart now in this city. Anytime they want to do it. And when they do it, they throw your shit in the trash and lock you up.
I also noticed in this very parking garage, which is right across from the Sheraton Grand Hotel, where the poverty pimpsters, or I should say Housing California people stayed at $160 a pop, there are signs posted that state that it's a misdemeanor to be in this parking garage other than to get your vehicle. So it is sort of a widespread criminalization of all other kinds of behavior here, such as lying down, sitting, sleeping, I don't know, smoking a cigarette unless you're a customer with a vehicle here. It's a way of making space off limits to people who actually need to use this kind of space.
You take right downtown on their pedestrian mall where all the trains come and all the buses come off of, there's a whole line of stores entirely down there, but there's only one place, and it's not self-evident, where a homeless person can actually sit down and quiet and still go around the corner and use the bathroom without peeing around a tree. And they're trying to close that down.
What is that place?
It's a church right over here.
The name of the church?
Huh? Yes, I've been inside the church.
The name of it? Do you know the name?
I think it's St. Mary's of Lima, Rose Lima or Lima Rose. It's the one you hear the bells from. It's a church around, it's like 2 blocks from here.
Now, Loaves and Fishes has this new Friendship Park. Have you been to it?
Yes.
What is your impression of that? It's where a lot of homeless people all seem to be clumped together in this one little roped-off, fenced-in area.
Yeah, and I would not stay in there if you paid me. Most all of the back row is drug dealers that are resting from the street or holding the main supply. The interior on the benches is full of winos and people that are carrying diseases that you don't want to be around. It's basically an area where the hardcore homeless that do not wish to work, do not wish to hustle, can just chill out during the daytime and crash while they roam the streets at night and do what they're going to do. So I would not go there. The staff is okay, but the volunteers, the idealistic kids who have no idea of the trials and troubles you go through on a daily existence to survive, not get rich, but just survive for the day. There's some dedicated people down there, don't get me wrong, but the most place I felt when I was there 2 years ago was most of the staff workers really don't care. They just want to get their day over, collect their paycheck, and go home. You know? And that's my opinion. I've got many people say the same thing, that they really don't care about the homeless. They're there for that fatty paycheck, that $30,000, $40,000 a year they're making off us. You know, they should go without their paycheck for 2 months and live in the same place we're living. Let us run them. And the ones that were homeless, I say 80% of them lose the fact that, in fact, they were homeless. I forgot how they were cheated when they were in our shoes. And they treat you just as worse, if not better, as worse, if not worser, than the ones that have never been homeless.
Almost more police-ish and militaristic in their... particularly they put in jobs where they control other homeless people.
Yeah, they love that authority. Once they get the authority, they abuse the authority. Not the authority that abuses the person. The person abuses the authority, and they do that. They just get on a power trip. And they stick with the little rules. Door can only be open from 10 to 2, and 1 minute past 2, it's locked no matter what. You know, no leeway. No give. You know? And I do not like going down there. I mean, the whole street from the entire area of Mission Lowe's, drug dealers. Mighty drug dealers. Mostly in Tweak. If not Tweak, Steve over here, Malta here, Pills over here, New Rigs over here. And God knows what's down there. And the Badlands, you can't go down into them. No Man's Land, Badlands, and Wastelands. You don't go down into them. You get still killed down there. I've been stomped down there 3 times.
In what period of time?
In 2 years. It's a very dangerous area down there. I mean, these people in the homeless in this area are basically very violent people, at least the ones coming off this and Lowe's. But there's 3 states of homeless in this town. A lot of people don't realize. There's the downtown people, which already goes to Fish and Lowe's, the Fish and Lowe's people, and then there's the trolls, who live out past here off on the train area, and they never come downtown. They have the food banks in LA and areas, and underneath the bridges, living on recycling and drinking heavy. There's actually three same classes here. And I found, maybe even a fourth I've heard about, but I've not seen. That's the train tramps. I don't know where their jungle's at, but it's somewhere in this town. So there's actually four social levels of the homeless in this town. And there is a difference in all four. Yeah, a difference, way difference. Because most of the homeless out of Fish and Lowe's are making $200-$300 a day.
And doing what?
Dealing drugs. Mm-hmm. I know at least 60 drug dealers down there eating daily at Fish and Lowe's, taking Fish and Lowe's services, and got $2,000-$3,000 in their pocket.
Nobody ever offered me any money, but that's another story.
Yeah. But I've seen them down there in their camps counting thousands and thousands of dollars with pounds of tweak inside their tents, bagging out the next day's sale, and have 30, 40 people work for them, and they're hanging at Fish and Lowe's.
Who are their customers mainly?
Fish and Lowe's people.
So not non-homeless people in the capital?
No, not that I know of. Almost all the sales are made right there.
But how can you make so much money off of people who don't have that much money to start with?
Because I'd say 60% of the people hanging at Fish and Lowe's are getting SSI checks or some sort of government assistance, welfare checks or whatever. They're getting money somewhere from the government, and it's all going back into the drugs. Yeah. I mean, Fish and Lowe's used to have a PE program to have Social Security checks sent to Fish and Lowe's, and there was maybe 1,000 people lined up on the days to get their checks. And they're all homeless. But who can rent an apartment in this town when it takes $1,400 to $2,000 to move in? And you need a bank account. You need a credit report. I mean, the Monarch Hotels, all these welfare hotels downtown, there was three reopened like 3 years ago. They were immediately filled. They had like 90 applications for everyone was available. And the screening process was so tough that most people that got into them were out of transitional housing. And that's where you give up a $600 check to live in a bunkhouse and have no money left over. And have to be in by 10, can't leave till 6, you're locked in as a prison. You have no freedom. And that's the ones that got the motel rooms, the ones that didn't need it, because they already had housing. Yeah. Whoa. Yeah. And I just see it. I mean, get down the streets. See it from the street angle, not from the high ivory tower these people are preaching from, and not from the little capital offices. You know, get down there and live with them. Don't go back to your apartment tonight. Grab your bedroll, strap a tent on your back, and come down to the homeless shelter and park underneath the park bench for the next 3 months. And see it from the angle that we see it from. I've been seeing it for 35 years, you know. Then you fully understand this problem, you understand the solution to it. Because most of these guys don't know that. You know?
We've been talking to Squirrel, who's now going to return to his writing, and hopefully we'll be getting those two books from you in the days ahead at some point. So one of the sponsors of Housing California is Bank of America. What do you think of them?
They discriminate against the homeless.
In what way?
I have a guaranteed settlement check comes in every month from an accident. It's $741.52. Comes in every month like clockwork. I do not have an address. I never have, never will. I don't have a post office box. It's still on delivery. You go to Bank of America, they'll tell you you need 3 forms of ID, you need a house address you've been in at least 5 years, you need a telephone number, and you need a work address. If you don't have any of those, you cannot put money in their bank. But they're here sponsoring, saying, yes, we like the homeless. We will help the homeless. You go to their bank, and you can't get any homeless services. It would take nothing.
You don't mean homeless services, you mean ordinary services for citizens, right?
Yeah, they'll help the citizens, but they won't help the homeless.
Well, you're a citizen, but they won't help you.
No, because I'm homeless. I don't have an address. I'm not homeless, I am rootless. I am residentially challenged, because I have my home. My home's a park bench, or it's underneath the hills, or it's the RV camper sitting at the rest part. That's my home. Whatever I feel like it is, backseat of my car is my home. I don't care. It's just a place to sleep at night. And I feel I should have the right to sleep in whatever I want to, as long as I'm hurting no one. And they can't understand that. I have the right to sleep where I fucking damn well like it, as long as I'm not causing harm to someone else doing it. And I don't care if it's the governor's mansion or the backseat of your mighty, fatty car or on a $1 million ranch on top of the hill. That's my choice, and that's yours. You know? And they just don't get it. Bank of America can solve the problem very easy because there's thousands of people that are homeless getting Social Security checks or settlement checks or some sort of financial income that set up one office, one simple office, give the guy take a homeless person and hire him for $10 an hour. Mm-hmm. All mail goes through them, direct deposit straight to their bank. You're talking $600,000 to $700,000 right here in the city of the homeless, going to Bank of America. You not only help Bank of America, but you also help the homeless. Because once you have the bank account set up, They and the homeless can't spend their money in one day because it's in their pocket. They got a checkbook, or they got an ATM card. They got to think about it before they spend it. Then you got some structure in their life, and maybe you can start getting some regulation in their life and start thinking about normal lines, and pretty soon they'll be renting an apartment. But you can't rent an apartment here without a checking account. You can't rent here without a credit report. How are you going to get a credit report if you can't get a bank account? And there is no bank anywhere here that will do that. Bank of America, I pick on because they do not like homeless. They had me arrested inside there.
Do any other banks allow this sort of thing, or just Bank of America?
All banks are the same way. But Bank of America's here.
A sponsor of Housing California.
Yeah, and that pisses me off.
Right.
They discriminate against the homeless. They come and say, oh, we actually want to help the homeless.
They use it as a sort of a PR cover for their...
Yes, a tax write-off. It's a tax write-off. It's nothing but a corporate game to them. They don't care. They're brazen about it. And they know they're practicing against the rules. They've got an internal memo that I was shown by their branch manager in Paso Robles that said if you don't have a street address and you consider homeless, no matter what, they're not going to give you a bank account. And that was internal memo from their corporate headquarters.
When was this?
4 years ago.
Probably hasn't changed. Huh?
Yeah, it still hasn't. I just went to it recently. And they charge you $7 to cash your government check. Guaranteed money. You walk in their bank, they're going to charge you $7 and you need two piece ID. Just to check, cash a government check. That's bullshit. It's guaranteed money. They're taking $7 for a little money I do have. You know, you go to one of the check cashing places, it's 14 to 18. You know? That's another ripoff of the homeless. They get their money, but by the time they get it in their hands, that's, you know, so much pieces come out, it's unreal. You can't get a post office box in this state without having an address first. So therefore, our checks must go to Social Security or General Delivery. You only use General Delivery for 30 days. Where's your check going to go to next? Third pier of the 12th Street Bridge? You know, we don't have an address. So it cuts us out of the Social Security benefits that we're entitled to. So therefore, we're denied our rights again and again and again. You know, I must change my Social Security at least once every 3 months of my address as I write out a place to send it to. You know, and I still refuse to get a post office box. It's not the box, it's the point. I should be able to have a check deposit in the bank somewhere because I have money that comes in regularly just by key transfer.
You were saying at one point that you were a man from the 60s who has never abandoned those ideals?
No, never. Not ever. I dosed heavy last night. I got a heart attack. I just came out of my fifth heart attack. He had killed me last night, and almost did, but I'm still there. I'm still suffering from it right now, but nevertheless, I enjoyed it. I still have the same principles of helping others, of karma, of passing on and sharing the wealth, of living by my wits, living on the edge between starvation and fattiness. That makes me stronger. And the longer I'm out here, the stronger I get. You know, it's only when you live on that thin razor edge of starvation and living fatty that you actually succeed in life. Because you never know what's going to show up. And you must face it day by day. Don't live for tomorrow. It's not promised. Yesterday's gone. Live for today. You know? It's a very simple fact. If you live in that way and live with a life of internal giving, it'll always come to you when it's needed. As long as you keep on striving. When you give up, you receive. When you strive, you go forward. As you go forward, you become stronger, become wiser. It's the only way to do it. You know? And my people just don't see that. I don't give up. My family doesn't give up. The old style hippies, they may not have much in this life. They have one thing that nobody else has. They have a circle of friendship that out of the way to help that brother. Not as a help, not as a handout, but a hand back up. They'll give him love, support, and be behind him 100% of the way. So they know that he's not giving up. Well, the minute you give up, you die. I mean, and that's not a way to go. You know?
That's from the man who intends to die soon.
Mm-hmm. I don't want to be a burden to society. That is becoming now a burden to you. What right do I have to ask you to support me in my younger age because of the life excesses that I had in my earlier days and did willfully?
Well, you always have a right to ask for anything. The person has a right to refuse.
Yes, true. But if I cannot do for myself, then you will feel obligated to do it for me.
Not necessarily.
That's true. But somebody will have to. Somebody will have to put me in a nursing home and force someone else to take care of me. And that I cannot see. If I cannot support myself and motivate me for my own power, my quality of my life has gone to the point I couldn't even stand it myself. So why live through it? It's time to take the next trip. Death. I do not fear it. Death is nothing more than something we've not experienced yet. I don't know what's on the other side of that curtain, but man, it's going to be one hell of a ride. And I look forward to it. It's somewhere I've not been yet. And I enjoy going to places I've never been. So hell. Never know, it might be a nice ride, it might be a bad ride. Who knows? But it's there somewhere. let's take it. You know, maybe the next trip around, I have a better time around on it.
We better check in with you again next year and see if you're still with us.
Who knows? I thought about last year doing it. I found a reason to live. I may find another one this year. It's a daily struggle. I'm not suicidal. I'm not depressed. Just I know my time is ending. And you must be like, when you realize your time is ending, it's time to end your own dignity. Don't go out with tubes down your throat, you know, and wired to monitors, you know. Go out in style and dignity. Go out the way you live, you know. Live hard, party long, die young, you know.
Any comments on the mental illness industry or the psychiatric victimization, hospitalization, incarceration system?
The mental ill problem in the States is a joke, because they're truly mentally ill. They can't keep them long enough to cure them. They kick them out with drugs in their pocket and expect them to take them and maintain the lifestyle when they're not confident to do so. And then when you go to the social workers here, there's 900 kids, 900 people to one social worker, and she can't take care of all of them. So it's just another money grind. Just a big joke. It means nothing. Absolutely zero, 100% nothing. They're just making the money off it.
What do you think of the hospitalization? I mean, some have said that people should not be forced to take medication, people should not be forced to have electroshock, or forced to be locked up in wards. What's your perspective on this?
If you are an endangerment to yourself or to the society at large, then I feel there should be some way to contain you until you're no longer a danger, whether it be mentally, physically, emotionally, or whatever.
People who talk to themselves on the streets, for example?
As long as they're not endangering themselves or endangering the people around them, let them be.
What about the third criteria, which is the third criteria that now you could be 5150 under the California Welfare and Institutions Code, which is gravely disabled? Should someone who is gravely disabled be allowed to be locked up or forced to be locked up for his or her own good?
Only if they cannot maintain their own lifestyle. And again, as long as they're not in their own endangerment, such as they could not take care of themselves by themselves, or not endangering the people around them, no. But if they're endangering themselves or endangering someone around them, then they should have some sort of, not really lock them up, but some sort of assistance program.
Because there is currently a revision of the law coming into play in California, which will allow authorities to lock people up on much less evidence. So, for example, right now you have to show danger to self, danger to others, or gravely disabled. Soon, if this law passes, it's the Thompson bill in the Assembly, it will allow you to be locked up for, if you have a mental condition that severely disadvantages you, I'm not quite getting the words right, and it will enable you to be locked up for longer periods of time. Plus, it will eliminate the possibility of refusing medication in institutions if they present it to you. Right now, it's hard to refuse medication, but there is a formal process which allows you a hearing of a kind where you can claim that you know the medications, you've examined the pros and the cons, and you feel that you can maintain a certain equilibrium, perhaps not, you know, the best in all possible worlds, but you have the right to refuse medication under certain circumstances. This right will also be eliminated under the new Thompson bill. What is your reflection on that?
That, to answer that, I'd have to go back at least 20 years. They're trying now, at least in California, as you explained it, to rectify an error they made back in the first part of the 80s of kicking all the mentally ill, the severely mentally ill, out of the mental hospitals, and only allowing them to stay 90 days at the most to long-term care. And now they're trying to reinstitute that with more of an anousing manner. The housing problem, or the homeless problem, as you call it, expanded greatly in the first part of the 80s. In fact, it probably quadrupled in a matter of about 5 years because of this. And now they're seeing the error of their ways. Our prisons are full of them. Our jails are full of mentally ill. So now trying to correct their mistake that shouldn't have happened in the first place.
That was the 70s when Reagan was governor,
yeah,
because
late 70s, early 80s, yeah. In there. You know, I don't remember the exact year. It's been a long time, brother.
The 60s when Reagan was governor.
Yeah. But it was all across the United States, yeah, they did this.
They stopped building housing. That's always been one of the big,
yeah,
laments of the housing people, that they, you know, stopped doing housing starts during the Reagan era. Squirrel, I appreciate your running all this by me. Any more thoughts before we go?
Yeah.
Before I go?
Reinstall the work program. Work without earning it creates no pride. As long as you keep beating them, they'll keep on coming.
Thank you, Squirrel. Mm-hmm. So we're in Zuina Imports. Zuina means beautiful, by the way. And it's about 10 after 5 on Tuesday afternoon. And we're in Davis, California, talking to
Dr. Roger Apodaca. I'm a mathematician, and I also play drums, among other instruments.
And That, of course, is the subject of today's interesting incident. You were playing drums where?
Down in Galt at the flea market. We'd taken some stuff from Zwina to sell there, and my fiance Laura Loeb is a manager, so I helped her out, and I played drums as a background, and it attracts people. I probably had, not exaggerating, 50 parents with kids and strollers.
Before you go into this, let me give a little background here. The store we're standing in, Zwina's, is how would you describe the kind of merchandise we have here?
It's principally Afro-Asian. We have over 26 nations represented here. It's artwork. There's no political correctness in here. The art you see here is done by artisans from Africa, principally, I guess West Africa and North Africa.
And the flea market you're talking about is in what town?
It's in the town of Galt.
Which is where? East, west, south, north?
It's south, a tad east of Sacramento.
And it's a hot town.
It's a very hot town, and it's very, very hot.
Pretty hot up here. Davis, it's about 95 out there?
Yeah, about 1 o'clock, there's almost nobody out, and people start closing up early.
Siesta time.
Basically siesta time.
But you were out there with your drums in the flea market.
Yes, we got there probably a little after 7. We set up, and then once we get set up, I sit down and start playing drums. And
loud, wham, bam, 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 or what kind of a drum is it?
No, it's a very quiet.
Do we have a drum here that would duplicate that sound?
Yes, we do. Yeah, would you like to hear it?
Could you do that?
Sure.
Would that be okay? We're actually going to get a real demonstration of the kind of drumming that is causing consternation among the bourgeois everywhere. This is a... How do we describe this drum? What kind of a drum is this?
A djembe.
This is a...
A djembe.
A djembe drum, okay.
Notice it's hand-carved.
Right.
It's one piece.
Mm-hmm.
It's from Ghana.
Uh-huh.
And it's a goatskin strung over a piece of hollowed out wood.
Okay, now two drums are playing. And that is the sound of drumming. And it also seems to be, it doesn't sound particularly offensive or difficult to me, particularly since we're listening indoors, and it's more contained and louder indoors than it would be outdoors, right?
Yes, and what is interesting is that when I stopped playing, because it's so hot, people would basically vacate. There wouldn't be a lot of people around. And when I start playing...
This sort of a commercial area, various stores or stands were vending their wares?
Yeah, many dozens of stands. It's like a very large flea market.
And did the merchants generally appreciate your being there?
Generally, the merchants appreciate it. And one of the merchants, the guy who sells their woven twigs into garden ornaments, he came over and actually picked up my chair and put it closer to the walkway where people go and move the drums around so I could be more visible and so more people could hear me.
Did
because
you tell him you would charge him a percentage?
He liked it because it attracted people. Mm-hmm. And people who normally would do well did better. Mm-hmm. And there were other merchants who tried to blame the drumming for distracting from their business. And what would happen is that people would walk by and come to see the drumming and basically hang out. And like I was mentioning before, probably at least 50 families with small kids in strollers. The kids would be mesmerized by the music. And little kids would sit and tamper with the drums if they could, and kids who were not able to speak that young would just sit and stare, and their parents were amazed at the fact that the kids would not complain, and curiously, one small boy, when I took a break, he started crying.
Huh. He wanted you to keep playing.
He wanted me to keep playing.
And this was today, what, between 10 and 2 or something?
Oh, probably between like 8 and 1:30 when
it
I played.
Got too hot to play?
I would have kept playing. I play very lightly. My hands don't swell. I can play for hours because of that, and I use variation of intensity as opposed to playing intense. Mm-hmm. And so whatever the intensity is, usually people can hear me talk while I play, or it doesn't disrupt their conversation.
Do they donate money in appreciation for your playing?
You know, I've been a street musician on the sidelines for decades, and I don't put out a coin.
But do they slip you $50 bills?
Occasionally I have people try to stick $5 bills in my hand, and one of the strangest things is to have people put change in my coffee cup when it's coffee.
When it's got coffee in it, right.
Yeah, I've had people try to shove quarters inside of Coke cans when they don't fit.
$50 bills, get the quarters, take them out of here.
Yeah, what's interesting is that you have vendors who are not selling, trying to blame the music on taking away their customers, because people are walking past their stands and standing in front of this Zwina stand. Or
is this a large town we're talking about where this flea market is? Larger than Davis?
It's a small town that a few thousand people, and seemingly so, and it draws people from probably 60 to 100 miles away.
So it certainly drew you, and it's not the nearest flea market, is it, or is it?
No, and in fact, it's an interesting flea market. Two women came by, and one of them said she'd hire me, except that the party she's going to have is in Southern California, down in Los Angeles.
Or fly you down or fly you back.
That's what I told her. Fly me down and I'll play for you.
There you go. The other thing is, I'm thinking, here in Davis, I just got here. I've been here in 25 years or so, but you know, I just came back into town to look around en route from a convention. And I noticed, I heard that your owner here, it was at one time trying to carry bumper stickers, but he was criticized for carrying them. Is that right?
Oh, there's people...
Davis is a conservative town?
Davis is what you call a politically correct town. It's actually it's a university town of about 30,000 students, 10,000 support perhaps, on a very small town. The town is actually maybe 10 to 15,000 people, but it's a good town. For example, a couple of doors down from Zwina, there's a parking lot. Mm-hmm. And every morning at 11 o'clock when the store opens, and after my fiance opens the store, I go out and I'll practice for an hour, 2 hours. The business people here ask me to keep playing because it relaxes people, it attracts people.
Well, I noticed a guitarist across the street was, an instrument player was playing earlier today.
Yeah, there's a breezeway next to Cafe Roma and Chipotle between it. And curiously, I played there for 4 or 5 years almost every day for hours, and people enjoy it. So it's not the music.
With or without a cup?
No cup.
No cup. This man is intractable.
Well, it's culture. I grew up when I was a little boy about 5 miles south between Davis and Woodland, and I learned to play recorders and make them before I was 6 years old, and my father were Comanches, Comancheros, and we sing outside and play music outside, so it's part of our culture. In a sense, you know, the university is growing up around us as opposed to our invading the university. Mm-hmm. And so Davis is a pretty nice
corporations, it's like weeds, they grow up everywhere, and they break through the sidewalks and they take over the entire town.
They're building very nice houses right in the middle of seed grain land, and a lot of us have very...
Very nice overpriced houses?
Overpriced houses, and if you go along the roads, you'll see places where the fields are tilled so close to the roadway that the ditches are actually underneath the power lines, and the telephone poles waver as if they're straws in the wind.
Wow. You know, I noticed, I talked to a couple of folks in the record shops, and they were telling me that... one man told me that the head shops essentially had been closed down by police in this town. And this, fundamentally, Davis is a very conservative community in some respects. Is that true?
Well, universities tend to be conservative in the sense that the students have to be philosophically stable. We have a problem in Davis because there's a lot of, say, heroin addicts. There's heroin, there's crack floating around, some crank floating around, and those kind of people tend to they'd be parasitic off the students. They steal from them a lot. And so you have a problem with young kids being kind of drafted into nefarious activity. And so you'll have kids who are teenagers coming from decent families getting involved in some pretty hard drugs, converting cocaine to crack, for example.
What about attacks on marijuana users? Is there a medical marijuana club in town, for instance?
There isn't a medical marijuana club that I know of, but there are a lot of people here who do use medical marijuana, people who, for example...
They're not harassed by police?
They're not harassed by police. There's actually, the police here, I consider to be pretty good. I mean, I paint...
You got a Food Not Bombs here?
Yes, there's a Food Not Bombs here.
They're not bothered by the police?
No. For the most part, Davis police are actually pretty good. If they think you're related to the university, think you're academic, think you're intellectual, think you're an artist, generally you can feel very free in Davis.
How about homeless people? How are they treated here?
Actually fairly good. They're known. There aren't that many homeless people, and there's facilities for them. There's a lot of people who relate to them, which you think of as on par or equal.
Micropower radio stations, any pirate stations here?
There's KDVS for on campus.
Which is probably a licensed station.
Yes, but it's like, you know, 9,000 watts or something like that.
Not a 40-watt station, which is, for example, what my radio station is, where this tape is being aired.
No, it's a little larger. There's a lot of interest here and a lot of support for artists and art and music. It's a place that supports innovation.
Your name again is?
Dr. Eugene Roger Apodaca. I have a PhD in mathematics, and otherwise I'm basically a street musician and an artist. And I write poetry and stuff.
Sociable and articulate man. Thank you very much for talking to us. Anything you want to add?
Well, you know, Davis is a nice place. Pass through, you know, enjoy it. And, you know, if you come here, you'll find that the people are interesting. I think that people shouldn't stay too long.
Yeah. Welcome to Davis.
It's a small
now go
town.
Home.
Yeah, no, really, it's a nice place. Davis is interesting because the stores here cater to that 30,000 students from all over the world.
Right.
So in Davis is a really nice place to shop.
Similar to Santa Cruz and Berkeley, by the way. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I think Davis is a little bit like Berkeley was in 1966 when I first went and hung out on.
It is about 10 to 10. Actually, it's around 10 on May 23rd. We're here at the Ritter House. This is the Marin County Plush Accommodations and Services for the houseless community here. And I'm sitting with the well-bronzed Bob King of the, what is it, Homeless in Action?
Mm-hmm. Homeless in Action, Homeless Hotline, yeah.
Bob has, of course, refused to return phone calls for the last 2 years, so I had to track this man down in his lair. We had hoped to snag him into the completely useless poverty pimpery in Sacramento a couple of days ago. Bob wisely declined any of that shit. And he's now here basking in the sunshine in a relatively kind of, I don't want to say decorated, because there's a lot of nice flowers and artifacts around here and right outside your office. What's the address of this place?
16 Ritter Street. Yeah.
And this has been here for how long?
This has been here for about 10 years now. Yeah, this office, but Ritter House was here before that. Yeah.
Funded by the county, by private agencies?
Private funding, yeah.
Now, are you still a burr in the saddle of the county? And in the old days, I know you used to be out there protesting, occupying supervisors' chairs. Oh boy, those were the days. What's happening now?
Well, those days are gone. I'm kind of just sort of trying to, you know, help people get the stuff they need. No more protests. Yeah.
The last protest, looking at those dinosaur days, was when?
Oh, God. Now you're getting... You're trying
ancient
to,
history?
Ancient history. God, I can't remember. It's been about 3 or 4 years, hasn't it?
You know, I don't recall myself. I know, of course, there was a tent city, Whispering Pines, in 92. I think...
There was some stuff in the city, you know... With the religious witness, yeah, that
against the homeless to reclaim housing at the Wary House,
right
at the Presidio.
And then we did some, a few marches here in town to remind people of the homeless that had died in San Rafael.
Plus, you did a struggle in '98 or '97 to make sure that is it St. Anthony's Soup Kitchen was not forced to move to the distant.
Right,
slum area.
Yeah, 2 years ago. I've forgotten about that. See how my memory is? No, St. Vincent's.
That's right.
St. Vincent's. St. Anthony's is San Francisco.
Right.
St. Vincent's
that
is
was
Marin.
Actually, that was sort of like the big victory. they definitely had their guns loaded and they were going to run St. Vincent's out of town, if not close them down forever. And the churches, bless their hearts, flooded the city council, 500 people strong. And the city council changed their mind, and voila, the accommodation was, well, they'd have to move, but they only moved down two blocks to the PG&E lot here. They're going to be part of this hotel complex. I forgot the name of the hotel. It's going to be buying that whole PG&E complex. And they're going to build a new dining room, and it's going to be in Central, downtown San Rafael.
That still is in the planning stages?
It's still in the planning stages, but it's going to be a reality. You know, it's starting to take form now. Yeah. The interesting strategy around how that came about was, since the downtown merchants didn't want St. Vincent's here, they wanted them elsewhere. The strategy was going to all the neighborhoods surrounding the downtown and telling them,
We're coming to your neighborhood.
We're coming to your neighborhood.
Coming soon to a neighborhood near you.
So all the neighborhoods banded together and went along with the church people to the city council and said, no, we think St. Vincent deserves to be right where they are, downtown. So they heard the voice of the people and voila.
And who is the genius behind this organizing strategy?
Oh, it was a kind of a group of us. You know, there were a few people from St. Vincent's, and foremost was Sue Brown. I mean, she was a former director here, and she went to St. Vincent's to kind of whip them into shape, and she was a vital part of that whole thing. I participated, and a few other people, and the church people, of course, were all, you know.
Well, I know that you've also been engaged in kind of keeping an eye on police harassment of people who sleep in their vehicles, because in Marin, probably like in Santa Barbara and other places, and Santa Cruz, affordable housing for poor people really is a vehicle these days, right?
Yeah. Well, we have a kind of an innovative, or at least it's an innovative program that's attempting to take shape. We have somebody within the police department now. His name is Dr. Joel Fay. And he actually is our new liaison, trying to create better relations between homeless people and the police department and the property owners. He,
like Dr. Eugene Schoenfeld, Dr. Hip from the Berkeley Barb of the 60s.
Not quite that far to the left, but can you hold on just a second? Yeah. What Joel does is instead of giving people tickets, Joel tries to connect them to services in the county, and because he does wear a uniform, it's easier for him to take somebody to the crisis center and get them admitted if they want, or to take them to a mental health connection and then help to get them into housing. So initially he's had some pretty good successes, but unfortunately he's only one individual.
And this is not a policy with the police department,
right.
Just
no,
one person.
It's like an experimental program. There's only one individual involved. So we have, you know, and to kind of illustrate, you know, how this thing has its ups and downs, he came to one of our meetings, and we were talking about how we might have certain people that could sleep on the church property, you know, and they could have special arrangements, have, you know, some kind of written.
Which church property are we talking about?
We're talking about St. Raphael's, and we're talking about Presbyterian Church up here.
Is it legal to sleep on church property at the present time?
Well, no. But we were trying to work that out.
In Santa Cruz, we have the Interfaith Satellite Shelter Program, which actually officially puts people up on the floors of churches every night.
Well, God doesn't want people sleeping on church property.
Well,
here.
They do clutter up the area, yeah. I mean, why don't they just go to Fresno, you know?
So anyway, he was trying to work that out, and there were a group of homeless people that attended that meeting, and everybody was kind of upbeat, because he thought that things could be worked out. Unfortunately, unknown to us all, the night patrol, which had, I guess, no communication from Joel, that very night came and rousted all the people that had been sleeping at that church, you know. They actually were sleeping outside. And
how many people was that?
I think there were 8 to 10 people there, and told them that they never could come back, and that the church indeed didn't want them there. These officers had gone to the church, told the church leaders that there were upwards of 22 people sleeping there, using needles and drinking and all kinds of stuff.
Are you suggesting that the San Rafael Police Department is conveying false and exaggerated claims to our church leaders?
Yeah, I think we have two sets of realities. One that Joel Fay was trying to explain, and the other one that, you know, this tax squad or whatever they want to call themselves was explaining. And it just, they're at odds with one another.
Well, Joel is naturally outraged and held a massive press conference demanding a change in policy, right?
Unfortunately not, because he's just one little, you know,
well,
leaf.
You got to keep your job, you know, in order to make change within the system, right?
Yeah, it's very difficult. If he makes too big a noise, this little leaf flapping in the wind will just, you know,
blow away.
So I don't know. I mean,
when did all this happen, by the way?
This happened about 3 weeks ago. Yeah. So
things have gone from worse to even worse.
Exactly. So now what's happened is, although there were, you know, although Joel is still accepted on a one-on-one basis as far as certain services he can do for individuals, there's a realization that, you know, police policy isn't going to change anytime soon, and that he, as an individual, is not going to be able to change this policy about homeless people not being wanted anywhere in that downtown.
Well, churches are really a sacred area. I think we have to understand that homeless people are profane, churches are sacred, that oil and water don't mix, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
After all, the mission of Christianity is to serve the worthy, and the rich are worthier than the poor, right?
Exactly.
Well, I think that's clear. So, we're talking to Bob King, who's been director or staff person or the paid poverty pimps, the man who runs a homeless in action resource tool here for many a moon.
Many a moon, yeah,
yes.
10 years.
Yes. And Bob, around this time of year, well, a month ago, the armories across the state generally closed. They were used by some localities to house homeless people on an emergency basis. You get to get up at 5 a.m. and line up at 4 p.m. and engage in, I guess, a little bit of sleep if you can avoid the coughing and listen to, you know, the illnesses that are transmitted across these venues. But even that was closed down in April, and I guess, did you have the use of the winter armory shelter? Was there this Novato deal, this special new shelter?
Actually, this Novato shelter now, that's a year-round deal.
It hasn't affected you.
It's not really, I mean, it's not a shelter as such where they just accept people. It's more like a program, because you pay a certain amount of money to stay there, and you have to be engaged in, trying to
clean and sober.
You have to be working on getting a job, and
no tie-dye clothing.
Well, I think you might be able to wear one tie-dye shirt, but there's lots of rules. And
fucking on the main floor.
Exactly. Yeah. So it works for some people, but of course it leaves the question, and this is something we talked about this winter, but it wasn't really a severe winter. We had talked about a wet shelter for those people that couldn't gain access.
Wet shelter, of course, is a shelter for people who are using and toxic drugs like cigarettes, alcohol, and the more flamboyant but actually less lethal hard drugs. I guess they're more lethal because they're purity is worse, and because you get to go to jail around it and get beaten up.
Right. So, and there seemed to be some interest in it, and we're actually, some of the churches were trying to open up their doors to this, but it just never got going. The weather didn't cooperate. I mean, I think if the weather had been a little more severe, we would have seen a better response to that.
Yeah. How many people were housed in this so-called program?
Well, it would have been, any given night there would have been probably at least 20 or 30 people that would have shown up.
Population of the homeless in Marin County, you estimate at?
Well, who knows, huh? Yeah,
give us a range.
God, I don't deal in numbers.
1 to 3,000?
3,000 is the number I heard, but, I don't know how they got that number. I know I didn't count them. So I don't know where the numbers come from,
Well, they come and they go, and the poor are always with us, right?
they're here, and you know, that's what makes the rich rich.
Well, I would say the rich are doing all they can to help the poor. I don't want to hear these kinds of class war type statements. That's not really appropriate in a man of your social service position. Now, what about the legal support system for those trying to change the situation? For example, in Sacramento, we have this group, the C-CROP, actually, as they call themselves, the California Homeless Civil Rights or Organizing Project, which met supposedly with the aim of securing homeless rights, civil rights for homeless people. Here in Marin, you have people, I guess you had Laura Hallinan, I don't know if she's still around.
Yeah.
Attorney at law.
Yeah, I mean, she sort of had her horns clipped, you know. Lost a lot of funding, and there were some laws passed about, you know, whether or not legal aid could go against county or federal agencies, you know. So she's really not doing the stuff that helped us get some footing early on. So legally, there isn't a whole lot happening.
You have some private attorneys who are donating massive amounts of time to help forestall this attack on the civil rights of the poorest in our land.
Yeah, it doesn't seem to be happening in Marin. I don't know if it's happening elsewhere. Somebody was pointing out and got real excited about a case down south about...
ICORN decision.
Yeah, the ICORN decision.
Decision, for those who've forgotten, which allows the necessity defense in cases of camping as a matter of right, not just a judicial discretion. So all you people who are accused of camping outside, jump on the ICORN decision and use it if you're being prosecuted. You also should know you have a right to an audio transcription of provided by the court at their expense under California law. Give a call to 423-4833, HUFF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, for more information on this. Now back to Bob King.
Well, in Marin, they have started now not to ticket you for camping. Either they'll just harass you and keep you moving, or they'll get you for other things like trespassing. But they don't ticket you for camping. Now, I don't know if that's in a response to this decision or not. In fact, some of these tickets, I've forgotten the exact nomenclature, but these tickets, essentially for camping, sleeping, were $600. But it falls under some other heading, so that it isn't camping, but it's something else, like trespassing or whatever.
There's an anti-lodging law, which has been a focus of this new organization.
It's not
647J, which you and I guess went to jail for at one time.
Yeah, it's some other law that they've dug up, and it's $600.
That's a reasonable amount of money, considering we have to understand that if homeless people can't train themselves to avoid breaking the law, how can they ever succeed in business?
Exactly. So, and the way that they can succeed is, of course, community service. Because if they don't have $600, they can do community hours.
Keeps them busy and off the streets. I don't see anything wrong with it.
Yeah, that's the way. Yeah.
So, so there are more people being left alone, or just more people not being given these formal tickets, and or being given tickets under other codes, or simply being harassed?
They're being harassed. I mean, as I've indicated, there is a concerted effort by the police, both the daytime and nighttime, to go around to areas that this is particularly true in the downtown area, parks or churches or whatever, where people might be camping out, seeking refuge, and to move them on and harass them, you know. They might give them tickets for drinking in public or whatever, but not camping tickets. And they just, they make their lives miserable.
Is this in direct response to the right to use the necessity defense? Or?
We're not quite sure, but it sure seems that way because, you know, of the way it's unfolding.
Do you have any legal assistance whatsoever? For example, in Santa Barbara, former public defender, chief of the public defender's office, Glenn Maurer, quit the public defender's office like a couple years ago and is spending full time defending every single camping ticket that comes along. He's won every case but two, and he's appealing those two cases using the necessity defense on those cases. So there's a slowdown in the Santa Barbara Police Department's machine against
them. They haven't learned about how to ticket people for other things in camping.
We should do a seminar and help those cops out.
Maybe the Santa Barbara cops could go down there and give them a seminar. Yeah. because they're doing something quite different here.
For those who are interested in learning more about the situation in San Rafael or being helpful, do you have a phone number or address people can call and write to, and maybe in a couple of years they'll get a response?
Well, a couple of years is awful soon, but I think we should look, for 5 and 10 year,
Be realistic, yeah.
So 454-3234.
Area code 415. Again, one more time.
Area code 415, and the number is 454-3234.
And are you on email yet, or is that still a thing of the future?
That's a future thing for me. Computers and all that stuff. I'm still struggling, with the medieval manuscripts.
Yeah, he's actually a great illuminator. He's a very illuminating personality. What about a fax number for those who have that technology?
Yeah, but I can't remember it right now.
And it's Alzheimer's gradually setting in. We've been talking with Bob King. Bob, any hope on the horizon or anything interesting? I know, for example, we haven't covered the situation with immigrants who are getting hassled for trying to get jobs on a job line here in San Rafael. We haven't covered what Food Not Bombs may or may not be doing, if it still exists, or what free radio stations there are. Any comments in any of those three areas?
I just feel rather, badly that, that things have not worked out the way we had hoped, a few years back, and I don't see too many lines of hope for the future. With George Bush as president, things surely cannot get better. And perhaps if there's enough chaos, then things can turn around. But, I don't see too much to...
What about the spirit on the streets among homeless people? When I was here last, you mentioned the ICORN decision. One fellow was very interested in implementing it and leading workshops. Did that ever come to anything?
No, it didn't. And I think part of it was the realization that the way the police officers were working is not to ticket people for camping. So it presented a problem on that level, and it also presented a problem as far as finding legal representation. It also, as we all know, is a huge problem getting homeless people who are willing to participate in being arrested, who don't have
Outstanding warrants. Outstanding warrants for outstanding individuals, I must say.
So, those are some of the issues. And, if you don't have legal representation, which we've seen have been deserted by the legal profession now, you can't go too far. And
how about alliances with other groups, like youth, people, who are often targeted by police for skateboarding and other things? African Americans and Latinos who are hassled because of the way they look. Counterculture people who may not be homeless, but who are, or medical marijuana patients. I mean, I imagine, how do police treat medical marijuana patients who are homeless here in San Rafael?
Well, generally, again, they use the tactic of not writing you a ticket. But depending on whether they like you or don't like you, they'll take your marijuana away and just toss it on the ground.
Do they provide Marinol as a substitute, perhaps?
No. No, they'll just throw it away because it's too hard to write a ticket, To write a ticket, that's a lot of paperwork, yeah.
Well, we have an actual homeless person here, and also a musician, who may have a comment, two or three or four, and... We've been talking to Bob King. We're going to allow him to escape. Bob, and so now we're talking to...
I don't care whether that's on or not. How long have you and Bob known each other?
Quite a while. 10 years. We were arrested together in San Francisco back in 1990, opposing the state anti-lodging law in Civic Center Plaza. How long have you been in San Rafael?
About 11 years.
And you're a man who is a musician? Is that fair to say?
No. I play guitar for a hobby.
Right. Anything you'd like to say about, what's going on the streets?
No.
Well, I appreciate your candor, and I'll stop thrusting this machine in your face.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
of the crux of the situation why we're opposed to the sleeping ban. Well, for one, because it causes insomnia, it's a violation of human rights, it goes against international laws, and it shows the total moral bankruptcy of this society. That's one aspect, but for another aspect, it causes a situation where the most backwards, ignorant, chaotic, Nazi, fascist elements, if that's enough adjectives for the people, mm-hmm. in this community, go around attacking poor people while they're sleeping. For me, it's just that's just out of some kind of barbarian days. Like, that shouldn't be happening in any civilized society.
I think it also shows that the extent to which bourgeois, middle-class craziness, if I can only call it that, can justify invading the most basic needs and rights of human beings under the pretext that they're dealing with a different species of individual, a poor person, a homeless person. I mean, imagine somebody coming into your house and shaking you awake at 11 o'clock at night. I mean, you know, it's inconceivable. I mean, there's sort of all the basic English common law and all the...
How would the city council members feel if activists or just people, or homeless people, or people in general, went to their houses, and I'm not suggesting this, but I'm saying, how would they feel if we went to their houses and, banged on their door at 11 o'clock?
Well, actually, David Silva and other activists last year some people were recommending that people call city council at between 11 and 8:30, and let them know that this is exactly what's happening to homeless people. And a little of this was done. I'm wary of doing this because I think it tends to backlash, and everybody starts getting sympathetic for the poor city councilman whose infirm mother is awakened at 12:30 at night. Of course, I guess they can always turn off the phone, whereas homeless people, they can't, turn off their need to sleep.
No, so. And the police go up and rouse them. I've heard it.
Right.
People, you've told the reports over the years. You've done such an excellent job in reporting about people getting kicked while they're sleeping by police boots, getting shaken up out of under their tree, up in the Poganib, getting shaken up out of a bridge, being forced. I mean, I remember seeing this guy, he used to crawl in this hole on the side of my house. He used to crawl in this hole every night, and I used to feel so disgusted that this is the way that people are treated in America, treated anywhere in the world. And that I know the reason why he crawled up under that hole every night, because that was the way to avoid the police, the pigs, while he's sleeping. And he wasn't crawling in the hole because it was a nice situation. I'm sure he'd rather be sleeping in a house, and if he couldn't get a house, he'd rather be sleeping in a grassy park or a sandy beach or a nice forested area where it's beautiful and where you can live and you can have some dignity. But, crawling up in a hole.
I hear you. Well, look, we've been talking with Jim Costner, whose claim to fame at the moment is removing symbols of oppression, one of those being the Columbus statue. This one was rather forcibly removed with a sledgehammer.
He made a lot of homeless people. Columbus made a lot of people homeless.
And a lot of homeless people, and a lot of people dead, too,
yeah.
I might note. Within the course of 80 years, according to Bartolomé de las Casas, a biographer of him and his son,
Diego.
Population of 1 to 3 million was reduced to zero, the Arawak Indians on Hispaniola.
Yeah, that's so. Right. And there's some records, like War Churchill says that there's between 5 and 8 million, and Howard Zinn says there's 3 million at least. And Bartolomé de las Casas says that it would be anywhere between 3 and 8 million. So there's a whole lot of numbers, and everyone agrees that it was shrunken down like about 90%, 95% reduction level. And they say that in the European Holocaust, it was about 75% of European Jewry that were Holocausted, which is just foul and wicked. And here in the Americas, we're talking about 90% Holocaust level. And the thing about the Nazi Holocaust, it's over with, for one. That's the main point. Point number two is that it's acknowledged throughout the whole of the planet that the Nazis had a systemic campaign to exterminate Jewish people. Now here, it's
as
been
well
going
as
on for 500 years, and there is hardly any acknowledgement of the Holocaust that is going on to this very day.
Yeah, but Columbus is one of my heroes, Jim.
How about Hitler?
The Führer, not so much so.
Oh, see, that's
he was a vegetarian and a dog lover, I understand.
That's what I find so amazing, is that Hitler is denounced, Columbus is loved, Mussolini's denounced, General Washington is loved, Andrew Sharp Knife Jackson, as he was referred to by the indigenous tribes of the East, he's put on the $20 bill and passed off as a hero, but Tojo over in Japan is a maniac. But Tojo in Japan, yeah, he was a maniac, and at the same time Tojo was a maniac, guess who nuked Japan? And guess who put 115,000 Japanese in internment?
You're just throwing too many things at me, Jim. I want to thank you for being with us and invite people who want to talk to you and listen to you to come on to the Porter Fireside Lounge on Wednesday at 7:30 in the evening to check out the sleeping band, Tent City, and the other topics we're going to be discussing, as well as the films we're going to be viewing, and also to come to the Coffee Klatch hearing on Tuesday at 8:30 in Department 5. Anything else you want to add?
Can I make a couple announcements before I go?
But of course.
Thank you very much for letting me be on the radio. And I will be there on Tuesday. What time is it Tuesday?
It's at 8:30. It might be at 9. It's a little uncertain.
What court? Department?
Department 5.
Department 5. I will be there on Tuesday morning at 8:30 or 9 o'clock, Department 5. I would encourage other people to come out to support Robert, Becky, and Bernard in regards to their being banned or attempted to be banned from the whole city hall, which is totally a violation of their rights and against the laws and against the treaties and against justice. That's one. Two is that, as Robert mentioned, please come out Wednesday night to support the abolition of the sleeping ban and support an established campground in the community for people who need it. And three, if you're interested on Monday night, come out to Stevenson's College Stevenson College, 6:30, meeting to free all political prisoners, Momia Leonard, Move 9, and so on and so forth. That's at Stevenson College, 6:30. June 5th at the Vets Hall, there will be Mel Mason, Steve Argue, Carlos Padilla, Alexis Medina, myself, and others dealing with prison conditions, jail conditions.
And when is this
brutality,
again?
The prison industrial complex and the police state. June 5th at 7:30 p.m. at the Vets Hall upstairs.
Great.
Thank you very much, Robert.
Thank you, Jim, and stay out of jail.
All right. Take care.
And that means you too. Stay out of the hoosegow unless you're going in for a good reason and you know what you're doing. And give me some feedback on my crazy scheme to go out there and park my sticker mobile downtown with a jug of coffee and a mattress on the roof. Is that another one of my crazy plans? Tell me what you think. 427-3772. Let's hear your thoughts on this. We're going into the last half hour of the extended version of Bathrop Spears Broadsides. Compliments of, really the Little Red Hen, who I guess is no longer going to be with us. And also Skidmark Bob, to whom my apologies and my thanks for letting me take over this time. Apparently there was a conflict, and he gracefully gave up the time to me, and I hope I can return the favor at some point. 427-3772 is the phone number to call, 427-3772.
And what's your name?
Danielle.
And you're?
Shannon.
Shannon, you got a guitar on your back.
Uh-huh.
Are you a player?
Yeah, I like to play.
Have you played here in Santa Cruz?
Uh-huh.
And how's Santa Cruz treating you? What's your impression?
Well, I just got back from Hawaii, so it's a little different for me to be walking the streets of Santa Cruz and think that, I don't know, I'm not really...
You're not quite oriented yet?
Yeah, it's just a little too... crazy, bombarded
Are you outside, so to speak? Are you living in a house or inside?
Oh, I'm on the streets.
You'll be sleeping outside tonight, probably.
Probably in my friend's van.
Have you been back for long?
Like 2 days.
And
she just got back yesterday.
So,
today, yesterday.
And were you both from the same place in Hawaii?
Yeah.
Yes, we were hanging out.
Santa Cruz, your home base, or are you?
One of.
And you... Well, I'm breathless
right here. He might have tobacco.
Oh, yeah, we're on the mission for...
Search for nicotine. Nicotine addicts. No, I have some cops here. I can put you into a recovery program, but I can just get them back. Probably not. I'm a mistake. So, are you a musician as a profession? Do you do it to survive, or do you do it for pleasure? Or?
I do it because it's what
both.
I love to do.
Yeah, pretty much.
It's my calling.
And have you had problems with the police for sleeping or playing or recently?
No. I've been on Hawaii for a while. I haven't been here.
How long have you been gone?
A few months.
What do you expect? What's your sense? Just your prediction?
I predict I'm getting on a bus and going to Southern California tomorrow.
Getting out of here. You too?
Yes, the day after tomorrow, actually.
Day after tomorrow, yeah.
So we got a transient population here. Watch out for people like this couple. A very vicious couple, I can assure you. Thank you very much. Anything you want to add?
Oh.
One love.
Wow. I'd like to say that it's good to be back on the mainland, and I'm really happy I'm here, and I just need to
orient yourself?
Orient myself, because I feel very scattered.
Well, if you want another hug, just let me know.
I'd love it.
So it's about 25 to 7 here in Berkeley in front of the, well, it says Berkeley Unified School District office. I guess this is Berkeley City Hall, right, Flower?
Right, yeah.
You're an old-time activist here, or a new-time activist, who's surrounded by other activista types. So what are you here for?
Well, I'm hoping that they do away with the lodging law, you know, hopefully in all California, and maybe it'll start here in Berkeley. And I was going to speak about how I was ousted from my sleeping spot one night, well, actually early in the morning, and I had to walk around, you know, sort of fear, sat up all night because I didn't really think I was safe any place to sleep. Anyway, where I should have gotten police protection and just been able to stay where I was at least for that night and not have to walk the streets.
Good question.
And I believe sleeping is a human right.
I hear you. And we'll get some more from you in a moment.
Okay.
I see some signs around, Flower. Don't bust me for sleeping. Winter shelter is closing. Forced homeless. Sleep is not a crime. That's a favorite one. We got some flyers here.
And this is the April 17th event in Berkeley, which was followed on April 24th by city councils passing 5-3, making the lowest priority enforcement of any citations involving the state anti-lodging law, 647J, which police, particularly UC police, use to harass homeless people for sleeping or resting or setting down their possessions. City Council, I repeat, in Berkeley on April 24th passed a resolution that required a complaint and two warnings before a Berkeley police officer could take action on this law, and also made it the lowest priority. So it was a significant change. Not everything that the folks had wanted. They wanted it to be simply the Berkeley police to be barred from enforcing the law at all, and also barred from enforcing other laws, such as the trespass laws used to harass homeless people in the city of Berkeley. But it was a significant action. It was a real action enforced to a large extent by masses of homeless people who showed up. 100 people showed up at that. Both these hearings, one week after the next, April 17th and then again on April 24th. So this is an interesting situation that you're going to hear some more about here in the closing moments of my show, last 20 minutes of the show. If anybody has any phone calls, any comments, any thoughts, you can always call in, and I will interrupt the show, 427-3772, to put you on the air. Also, if you want to actually see what happened in Berkeley, you will be able to see videos of this on Wednesday, May 30th, at Porter Fireside Lounge, where we're going to be showing videos by Ken Mosseich, who has himself is actually a victim of this law. He's an African-American graduate student who is now homeless and therefore targeted by the UC police, the Berkeley courts, and the Berkeley Police Department. His book has been confiscated by the Berkeley police, and he's actually done several videos on the subject, which you will see along with the video Campground, which is happening at also at this time on Wednesday at 7:30 up at Porter. Let's continue listening to stuff in Berkeley in front of Berkeley City Hall, where we were listening to Flower Hopkins, and we'll be listening to other activists.
We've got a couple of little signs that people can carry if they want a legalized sleep sign. Sure.
Thank
passing out
much.
My own legalized. Sure.
Awesome.
Want to pass some out?
Sure. Thank you.
Go for it. And it looks like a nice crowd. We got 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, 120, 130 people, number of video people. Pass the homeless and civil and human rights resolutions as one sign. Folks are sitting on the steps chowing down. Here's a disreputable looking character if I ever saw one. What do you got here, sir? Strategy for use of public comment. So what is all this about, and what is your name, sir?
I'm Gray, DJ Miles, except this is Tuesday, and I'm usually on my show in BLR, but since I already did that, I guess I'm just Greg from the Tracks, Protest of the Weapons Station in Concord, also known as John Doe 1. Oh, I'm in Berkeley, though, so I must be John Doe 51, right?
That could be it.
I see that you're sitting next to this, this barefoot cook with a huge meal of spaghetti and cheese, or is it lasagna? I can't tell.
Lasagna. Hi, Bonnie. I think turkey's on the other table. I'm vegetarian, actually, and I just had three helpings of other people's salad at the quarter meal, so.
Good, I must say. But what do you think here? Is there actually a chance that this group of city councils will actually pass some resolution? What are the opportunities?
Well, there's always hope. I hear they've probably been getting calls from the business criminals all day long, so we're just trying to counter that and
show up in numbers, make up in numbers what you ain't got in dollars. I see a bunch of people in camouflage outfits up there. I see, but this way they have hats and kind of brush attached to their hats. What is that about?
Oh, you better run up and ask them.
I better go ask these people immediately what they're kind of, maybe they have another issue they're working on. Save the Redwoods, looks like to me. Well, thank you. Anything you want to add?
Green, I mean, I don't want to disagree with them. It's probably a different issue. And then you got the taxi riders over there. That's another issue. A
number of issues here in Berkeley.
But I say save the trees.
Save for Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Why don't you just let people sleep?
What a radical idea. You should be arrested immediately. Thank you very much. So now we're in the building, actually the City Hall. It's about 10 to 7. People are filling out cards. What are you here for?
I'm here to support the homeless for the homeless housing. The HH there.
Get it together here.
Hey.
So what's your name?
My name's Tammy Rowan.
Tammy, are you, you've been an activist sometime, Robert Norris, right now. We're filling out cards here.
Robert,
yeah, bathrooms, Pierre, Robert, if you will. That's my nom de duda. So, as a man who hasn't been to Berkeley City Council, for our Free Radio Santa Cruz folks, what would you like to tell them about the Berkeley City Council, either of you, about how this works? What should we expect here tonight?
Basically, what we're going to do is all the people that are working in our organization and the other community activist groups that we're working with, we're all filling out speaker cards. We have already made a list of about 9 speakers. They call 10 speakers. If they call any one of us, we're going to defer to the ones that we've already listed. There's no way all of them are going to be able to speak, but we want to get as many people possible to sign up to speak from our organization so we can just defer to them.
Okay. And what exactly are we hoping from City Council?
We're hoping to get basically a vote in support of the homeless rights resolution that was introduced and is going to be voted on tonight.
Is that likely?
We don't know. We're hoping so. Yeah, it's 50-50.
Yes, that's what Gandhi would have said, I think. Don't forget the cap.
Well, he also said Western civilization would be a good idea.
Right, but well, that's another problem.
That was a little more quotable. It was the same problem.
And your name is?
Andy.
Thank you, Andy.
I'm not getting them.
So you're carrying a blanket. Now, what does this mean? Are you just trying to intimidate the city council? What's going on?
It would be nice if the city council could be swayed, yes. I don't know if the blanket will do it. I have a few chosen words I want to drop on them.
And what exactly are you going to tell them if you have the opportunity?
Ask them to go and put the moratorium on 647J into place until they go and come up with a better alternative.
Now, 647J is an archaic 1872 state anti-lodging law. Is this the main law used against homeless people found sleeping in public places in Berkeley, or do they use a local ordinance?
I think this is the one they use. It's a convenient law is what it is.
Mm-hmm. Now, what is your name?
My name is J.C. Orton. I represent the Catholic Worker.
And are you yourself a homeless individual?
No, I'm not. I can go home tonight and sleep in bed.
Well, so in other words, you're just an interloper and a troublemaker.
I hope so.
And who is this person?
Genevieve of the Catholic Worker, Dorothy Dayhouse.
And what's been happening? Do you notice a cessation of tickets, an intensification of sleeping-type tickets? What's your experience?
Well, I have never been homeless, and I don't have experience.
What about you? You had a longer beard than she does.
I've been homeless for maybe 3 or 4 months back in my late 20s.
Right, but in terms of your sense, is there an intensification of ticketing going on or a lessening? Any sense on that?
Well, I know it's going to increase because the people out on the street are going to increase as a result of the winter shelter being closed up.
Yeah.
But
That's 120 or 130 people being added to the population of the homeless.
And the number who will be getting tickets?
The number of sheltered places available is
not increasing,
which would be right now amounts to
Less than 125 here in Berkeley.
And the number of homeless people you estimate in the Berkeley City area is
probably right around four figures.
Four figures meaning?
About 1,000, maybe more, maybe less. It's hard to put a particular number on it.
Anything you wish to add for the bozos in the audience or on the City Council?
That we have peace tonight, and hopefully we can get our message to the City Council, and that most of all, the City Council could act on it tonight.
No justice, no peace. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Councilmember Worthington, what are you expecting to happen tonight?
What do I expect to happen?
Yes.
That's good.
You're introducing a resolution, yes?
Right. I hope the City Council will vote for the resolution. You but who knows?
Do you expect that it will be amended?
Some people will vote for it.
Will you be voting for it?
Well, the question becomes how much we have to water it down in order to get enough votes for it to win.
And right now I've heard that there are four votes and you need five. Is that accurate or not so? I know the Brown Act would prohibit your actually.
Yeah, we can't have five council members talk to each other.
Right.
So we're not sure. But I think we'll do the best we can.
Okay.
See how far we can take
Where
it.
Where on the agenda is likely to come up?
Hard to predict because there's a senior thing and a disabled thing that are early presentations, and the disabled people have to leave with, you know, so
it could be a while.
Yeah, sometime probably 9 o'clock or so. I would 9 or 10, I would guess.
Get your sleeping bags ready. Thank you. Any comments about tonight's festivities?
Not at the moment, sir.
Thank you. But just what is your name, madam? Oh, she's hiding in the... Come back. You're here for another purpose than the homeless issue. You're here for...
Well, for to save Cordonesis Creek, to prevent a parking lot and road from being built near the green corridor there.
And how many folks would you say are with you here tonight? Have you got a fairly large crowd?
I think the whole...
Well, I mean, in terms of, yes, but in terms of activists, how many activists think on this particular issue have showed up?
Well, the people that are wearing the branches.
Actually, you've got some people masquerading as trees.
Right, as oak trees, right.
This is sort of unfair, kind of in this growing situation here. I mean, might they not be watered by mistake? I mean, this could lead to some confusion, don't you think?
I don't know.
Anything you want to say about this issue?
Well, I think it's important to protect the open space that we have in Berkeley, and to put a parking lot and road near the Cordonesis Creek corridor is a move in the wrong direction. That the city has a joint watershed agreement ordinance to help to